We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt testified yesterday on Capitol Hill. He is President-elect Trump's choice to run the EPA. He's been a longtime critic of the agency and environmental regulation as a whole. Here he is at the end of his prepared statement addressing the science of climate change.
We deal with weighty issues, and there's passion on both sides of issues. But we should not succumb to personalizing matters. We should encourage open and civil discourse. One such issue where civil discourse is absent involves climate change. Let me say to you, science tells us that the climate is changing, and then human activity in some manner impacts that change. The ability to measure with precision the degree and extent of that impact and what to do about it are subject to continuing debate and dialogue, and well, it should be.
NPR meteorologist Paul Huttner is with me in the studio. Paul, what do you hear in the way that Pruitt and some of the others have phrased their thoughts around climate change?
Yeah, I hear the sort of skepticism and the not accepting of the climate science part of it. I hear that underneath in the tones. And if you look back at the record, you know, why people are saying that it's really not the fox just guarding the hen house, but sort of deciding what's for dinner here, because he sued the EPA 18 times. He's a plaintiff in 8 active lawsuits. So he's plaintiff defendant now if he gets the nomination goes through.
But he is anti-environmental regulation, which doesn't automatically, I mean, we know that from some of the things he said, which
right.
doesn't automatically translate to, and he doesn't believe in the science of climate change, does it?
The subtext that I see, and just to be honest from my gut, I think he is very skeptical, and I think the forces driving him are the oil and gas industry.
Yes.
It may not be quite that cut and dried and simple, but I think that's the trend of where he may be going. And, you know, this is where policy directly affects the atmosphere, and we're going to find out, as I've said before, I don't think we're going to stop and turn on a dime here. Market forces are driving renewables, are driving natural gas versus things like coal. Natural gas a little more atmosphere friendly than coal. So it's a wait and see to some degree, but this is something that certainly has people's eyes open who are watching climate science.
Let's bring Rob Meyer in, our guest here for the discussion. He's a climate change reporter for The Atlantic in Washington, D.C. Hi, Rob. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me, Carrie.
So you've heard a bit of my back and forth with Paul. Where would you come in on where Pruitt and some of these others who have been testifying stand on climate change, on the science part of it?
Yeah, it's funny because Pruitt sounds these quotes. I definitely agree with Paul that he is coming from a place of skepticism. I think, first of all, you know, what he said doesn't match the scientific consensus. But he sounds very sensible saying it, and also he's very kind of, I think, intentional and crafty about how he phrases what he's saying. So at the end of his quote, he said, you know, these things are the extent of the impact and what to do about it, that's subject to continuing debate and dialogue, as well it should be. Well, he's just merged a scientific topic and a policy topic. There is definitely still an ongoing policy discussion about what to do about climate change,
right.
Even in countries, you know, Canada and Germany and throughout Europe that are agreed kind of across the political spectrum that climate change is real and happening and something to address. By tacking in these scientific topics, you know, how precisely we measure climate change, how certainly we know that it's happening and know the causes behind it. He's merging these two, you know, kind of entirely different fields of knowledge or fields of discussion on the issue, some of which are really quite settled and some of which are, you know, open for debate because they're primarily political or policy discussions. Apart from what the science says.
Rob, this question of being a denier or not came up this morning on Morning Edition with an interview that Steve Inskeep had done, and then David Green was with Pruitt, and then David Green was talking to Congressman Markey, who was on the committee. Listen to this exchange, and I'm interested in what you and Paul hear in this.
Do you agree that global warming is a hoax?
I do not, Senator.
So Donald Trump is wrong.
I do not believe that climate change is a hoax.
Senator, our colleagues who report on science here at NPR have not found an example of Pruitt actually explicitly saying he doesn't believe in climate change. Here he's saying climate change is not a hoax. Has there been a little unfair labeling by critics, you know, calling Pruitt a climate change denier?
What do you think on that, Rob, that language of being a denier?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've set an extremely low bar for all of President-elect Trump's environmental nominees, kind of anyone who will touch policy, because Democrats tend to ask him, they've all been men, so they tend to ask him, do you believe this is a hoax? And they all say, oh, no, I don't think it's a hoax.
See, I find that so unhelpful. I don't think that really tells us anything, but go ahead, sorry.
Exactly. No, I completely agree. And then they kind of, usually the nominee makes this equivocating statement about, oh, well, this debate's still out, or scientists are still debating whether this is happening. Before this hearing, actually, the main kind of quote we had to go on for Pruitt was one where he said, climate change is happening, but its extent and its connections to the activities of humanity are still under debate.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not true. We know, as in 2013, an international panel of scientists for the UN said that there's a more than 95% chance that humans are the dominant cause of modern day climate change. And evidence since then has only gotten stronger. And this is something we've known for, at least 16 years in an entire community way, and it's something that the evidence has demonstrated, for at least 20 or 25 or 30 years. So when he says there's still debate about its connections to the activities of mankind, if not denying climate change, he is denying what science tells us is certainly true about climate change. And he's doing effectively what the deniers want to do, which isn't necessarily to just get people to believe that climate change isn't happening, but to get people to think that there's still a debate going and therefore it's still too early to act.
To undermine the science of it. Paul, I just want to read for you what Governor Perry is saying, because he's before the Energy Committee. He says, I believe that the climate is changing. I believe some of it is naturally occurring, but some of it is caused by man-made activity. The question is how we address it in a thoughtful way that doesn't compromise economic growth, the affordability of energy, of American jobs. Are you seeing a threading of the needle there, too?
Well, here's the irony of that statement to me, Carrie, is that American jobs is exactly the reason why renewable energy should move forward more quickly, because it's demonstrated that it's growing at 20% a year. Those jobs pay well. They pay higher than the state average in Minnesota. And if we're going to generate more American jobs, the way to do that is through an energy transformation. There's a huge sort of moonshot opportunity here. So I think it's ironic that people seem to be afraid of the cure for climate change, the policy.
You said the cure?
Yeah, cure.
Yeah.
And what that really is it's more of an opportunity, and that train has left the station. It's moving forward quickly, and so it's ironic that people are talking about a job-killing sort of situation when the reality is to go back to coal or to go backwards on energy is what will really kill jobs when they're moving forward so quickly now in the renewable energy sector.
Rob, this is something else that I wanted to bring up that follows just on what Paul just said, which is this. I think to put this person who has sued the EPA and really gone to court on behalf of the oil and gas industries, more than even whether what he says about the science of climate change, for me, is you're putting, and I think this is what Paul was saying when he said you put the fox in charge of the henhouse. To put someone like this at the head of the EPA is something we really ought to be watching closely. What do you think happens? Because it looks like he's going to be confirmed.
Yeah, I think he probably will be confirmed, if only because the Republican, there's a Republican majority in the House. You only need a majority to get nominees through, and so far they haven't seemed too interested in kind of when Democrats and independents are outraged at a nominee. They're just going to rush them through. I agree. I mean, this was a thing that came up yesterday because kind of every Democrat wanted to implore Pruitt to handle climate change more seriously, or wanted to get some promises from him that he knew the seriousness of the issue. What matters is what he's going to do. he said yesterday repeatedly that he would follow the federal statutes, that he was going to do exactly what the law told him. He's intending that to be in contrast to overreach from the law, from what he sees as the Obama administration. We don't know what his downgraded approach to EPA regulation will look like.
Right.
And in fact, there weren't many questions about it yesterday.
I know. I found that kind of frustrating. You're in charge of it. What are you going to do?
He repeatedly told Democratic senators that he thinks the EPA has an obligation to regulate CO2, to regulate carbon dioxide, as a result of this 2007 Supreme Court case that found it was a harmful gas, and then this later endangerment finding on the part of the EPA that agreed with the court case. And I think he'll have a very hard time undoing the 2007 case and the endangerment finding. No one actually asked him, okay, well, you say there's an obligation. What is that obligation?
Right. Exactly.
What are you going to do as a result of that?
And, exactly.
And just to go back to Paul's point, too, there's more jobs in solar and wind energy than there are in coal.
Mm-hmm.
The renewable energy industry is growing much faster than the fossil fuel industry, and it may already, as a whole, the renewable energy industry may employ more people in the United States. So from a pure jobs perspective, and not only that, but it employs a lot of medium to high-skilled manufacturing jobs.
That's true. And let's talk about that for a minute, because policy versus markets, let's say that Pruitt gets confirmed, which most people are expecting. How quickly can policy changes impact greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S.? In other words, will these market forces you're talking about sort of forestall any policy effects for the short term?
I think no one knows. I mean, President Obama went to bat last week in the journal Science with a piece of commentary where he said, look, I think this trend toward renewable energy is irreversible. Mm-hmm. And in fact, so much of the investment is made because of the perceived irreversibility of that trend. You know, people say, okay, well, everyone, all these power companies will be moving to greenhouse, to renewable energy eventually. And so therefore, I, as an investor, should invest in it or start a company or find a place to put my money. I think the question will be, can the Trump administration, question the irreversibility, cast doubt on the irreversibility of this renewables trend?
And how would they do that, Robin? And I just have about a minute left.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they were to, in some ways, a lot of the irreversibility comes from the perception that at some point we know the power sector will get regulated in a green way.
Okay.
And if they're able to erode federal power to do that, to the degree where people say, well, hey, maybe this actually isn't going to happen in the next 15 or 20 years, then they could start to turn the needle. But I think that will be really hard.
Rob, really good to have you on the show. Thanks so much. Please come back and talk about
climate
science again.
Hey, absolutely. Thank you for having
again.
Me.
Thanks, Rob.
Love
Paul,
to be here.
What else are you watching? I don't want to miss the hottest year designation here. Would you say something about that?
Third time in a row, of course. NASA and NOAA coming out yesterday with confirmation that 2016, as we've been talking about, was indeed the hottest year on record globally. Now, that's unprecedented. I hate that word. It's overused, but it's appropriate here. In the modern climate record, going back to 1880, we've never had three consecutive warmest years on record. The five warmest years now have all occurred since 2010, and 16 of the 17 warmest years since 2000. So the trend here is remarkable, and it's opening a lot of eyes to many climate scientists and asking, you know, is this now, on top of the warming we've seen this century, more of a step change where we've kind of taken a big step forward here? There's also talk in the model saying a new El Nino may develop again late next year, which implies that this could be another top five warm year. I do not think this will be another record warmest year in 2017 globally, but very interesting to watch. And two, we're hearing word about a House Bill 235 in Minnesota that would kill solar energy incentives in Minnesota. As we talked about, solar jobs growing 20% annually. So you have to wonder why Minnesota would introduce sort of a job-killing anti-solar energy bill. But keep an eye on more news on that coming
forward.
Being
debated over at the Minnesota State Legislature.
That's right.
In St. Paul. Paul, thank you.
Thanks, Carrie.